You're listening to the Incarcerated Christian Podcast, where we shine light on the dark side of Christianity and how it affects people and communities. I'm Robin Mitchell Stroud, and I'm here with my co-host, Deborah Levy Martinelli. We'll be covering a variety of topics, from individual survivor stories, including our own, to the influence of religion on our national politics. To learn more about the podcast, visit our website, theincarceratedchristian.com, or connect with us on TikTok and Instagram at The Incarcerated Christian, and on Twitter at @TICC_podcast_. Now, on to the show.
Our guest today is Aldo B. Martin. Aldo is the creator and producer of Aldo B. Martin Presents The Reclamation, a podcast that gives a voice to people who have experienced religious cults or high control organizations and the ways in which they have overcome those experiences. Aldo became a Christian at the age of 18, but wasn't raised with any form of religious structure or belief system. He discovered and converted to Christianity when he joined an international Christian organization. He left the organization after 9 years when he was 27. After years of self-reflection and therapy, Aldo came to recognize his former organization as a religious cult. We're going to talk to him today about his personal experiences, including how they impacted his mental health and what led him to launch his podcast. Aldo, welcome to the Incarcerated Christian Podcast.
Man, you know, as you read that, I'm like, he sounds cool. Who's that guy?
That's what we said.
Thank you for having me, man. I'm very happy to be here. Super excited and nervous, like I told you guys.
Well, we are. This is just going to be a conversation amongst friends, but we are so happy to have you. And I have to tell you, I am a big fan of your podcast. I've listened to every episode, and lots of parts of it stood out to me, including talking about this as like an all-encompassing way of life, and talking about the recruiting practices and the us versus them, and like just the high control stuff. That's very, very. Oh my gosh, that just resonates so strongly. But what I was thinking is I'm hearing you talking about your own experiences. So you sort of identify as being part of a cult. Well, I was raised in Baptist churches, mainly Southern Baptist. And those are very mainstream, considered mainstream, but they were highly controlling. So there's so much overlap. And that's partly why I was really excited to talk to you after having heard parts of your story through your podcast. So thank you for coming on board and talking with us. And this is the ICOC is the International Church of Christ. We're going to get into that. And that is the church that you joined. And I have Church of Christ family, you know, family members in Church of Christ. And thank you for helping me to understand that the International Church of Christ is a break off of the Church of Christ, because now I can kind of get that in my, you know, my thinking. But our experiences are not dissimilar. And it's partly why we have a brand that is the Incarcerated Christian, because if you think about incarceration being on a minimum, medium, and maximum sort of scale, literal incarceration, religious incarceration works the same way. So there might be parts of your story where you're more on lockdown than me, and parts of mine where I'm more on lockdown than you. But you and I clearly experienced the medium, maximum version, whereas Deborah experienced the minimum version, which is also why, can't wait to talk to you about all of this.
Oh, man, there's a lot. There's a lot. There's a lot to say.
We normally start out by asking our guests, what was your religious upbringing?
So I had zero, right? Like, there was no religious upbringing whatsoever. My mom, when we came to America, my mom studied with Jehovah's Witnesses. And I also think that was because they spoke our language, right? They were speaking Portuguese. So I think that was part of her way of building some sort of community. But they would just come over to the house and study. And my brother and I, we had nothing to do with that. And so we'd never been to a church or anything like that. And I think that my first time ever being in a church building was when I was 13 at my cousin's wedding. And I'm sitting there in the wooden seats. I'm like, man, what is this? Man, these seats are uncomfortable. I'm not coming back. So that was it. So there was no religious upbringing whatsoever.
Yeah. I love that you don't even call it a pew. That tells me that you don't have that religious upbringing.
part of my lack of formal vocabulary for that.
I hear you.
I had no idea. So then but the only constant that was in my life was this constant sadness that I didn't know it was depression. And it wasn't until, going through therapy as a 30-something-year-old man where we're able to, work backwards. And depression kicked in at a very early age for me, and I didn't realize what it was. And then here comes this church. Here come these people. And it's like, it was a breath of fresh air. It was like, wait, the people think I'm cool to hang out with? The guys think I'm cool? The girls don't think I'm ugly? What? Oh, man, I'm here. That's it. It was a savior for me, and ironically, I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, there was a bit of a drag on our Wi-Fi. I shouldn't have interrupted you. I just want you to tell the listeners, at what age did the group come find you?
Oh man, 18 years old.
18.
18 years old. And 18-year-old me was at a very low point. Okay. People graduate high school at that age, or they are entering college at that age. I did horribly in school. And part of the reason I did horribly was because I was just so sad and unfocused, it was a bad place. And having grown up, people telling me that, telling you you're stupid, telling you you're worthless, like literally saying these things, right? And it's from multiple angles I'm getting this. After a while you believe it. But here I am though, I'm entering high school, my fifth year of high school. And how embarrassing is that, right? How embarrassing, because everybody else that I entered school with, they're gone. They're gone. And I'm now the old man in high school, right? And I didn't think there was anything to look forward to in life. I was not suicidal. However, I was close to it. And the reason I separate the two is because I have a lot of respect for people that experience suicidal thoughts, because that's just another need. Nobody wants to be that. Nobody wants to be that. And for whatever reason, sometimes people feel like that's the solution. And I have I don't know if respect is the right word, but a certain reverence for it, where it's like, man, I really feel for them. So I can, when I say depressed, I can't put myself on that level because it's a different need. But anyhow, whatever the closest thing is to being suicidal is what I was. And here comes this, I'm riding the train home one day, Friday night, and here comes this guy, and he says, hey, you want to come to church? I'm like, hell yeah. And it wasn't because I wanted to go to church. It was because somebody invited me to something. I was like, wait, what? Really? All right, let's do it. And so 18 years old. So when I stepped on foot in the church, and it was at an outdoor venue, it was, I really remember it like it was yesterday. And this is 1995, right? So this is, I don't know how many years ago that is, but man, ladies, I what a feeling. I that's one of those things. You know how you live through life and there's like certain things, maybe 10 memories you have that you remember vividly, that you remember what it smelled like, what it felt like. That's one of my 10. That's one of my
10. Sure.
Yeah.
So what was that feeling that you felt? It sounds like it was the opposite of depression. It sounds just euphoric almost.
It was euphoria and relief at the same time, right? Euphoria and relief at the same time. Because it was like, oh God, even as I'm thinking about it now, it's like, sometimes I get emotional about it, but it was like, I didn't have to look anymore,
Yeah.
I didn't have to look anymore. I didn't have to try to figure it out. I found home.
Yes, and you had mentioned that you were looking for belonging and connection and acceptance. Who doesn't want those things? I mean, and love. And you found all of that in this experience and then with the group after that, right? So, yeah, who wouldn't want that?
Who wouldn't want that?
Yeah, especially when you come from being told that you're not going to amount to anything, for lack of... Plus, you also mentioned, Aldo, that all of the people looked happy at that event.
And let's talk about that. I mean... Yeah.
All the people looked happy.
Oh, shiny, happy people, like the REM song.
Yes.
It was... And not just happy, they looked attractive, right? Because when you, at least for me, at 18-year-old me, when I think church, I'm thinking old ladies. I'm thinking old ladies and big hats and nothing fun, right? But everyone was like around my age or a little bit older, but they looked so attractive. But what made them attractive was their being so inviting, you know? Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Who wouldn't want to be a part of that?
Yeah.
You know? And then when the man got up to speak, the preacher, when he got up to speak, the message was, God wants you to have a good life. He wants you to have a full life, and he wants you to be happy. And that blew my mind because I was not expecting that, you see? I wasn't expecting that because as I'm thinking my concept of church with the old ladies and the big hats, there's also this image of God as this angry father, you know, who you better not cross.
Yes, yes. Right. Yes. That's the one I grew up with. Yep.
And so he's saying this. I'm like, yo, you know what? Yeah, I'm going to set up roots here. So it was so. And you know what, ladies, I didn't care that they were talking about God or Jesus, to be quite honest with you. I really didn't. They could have said Jesus's name was I don't know, Raphael. Didn't matter. I would have went with it. You understand? I would have been okay. That's what we're okay. Got it. That's what I'm doing. So, yeah, that's where that is.
Well, that's huge. So you ended up joining that church and being there for quite a while. And part of what I love about your podcast and what Deborah and I even were talking about today is I love that you unpack for people the recruiting practices because they brought you in and then you as a member are then expected to bring other people in. And they're not that different from what I experienced. I'm a cradle Baptist girl. You know, I wasn't brought into it at 18, but I grew up with it. So it's so familiar to me, the things that you all were talking about. Will you share with our listeners some of that being on the receiving end of that recruiting? And then when the shift happened, where you start to become a recruiter. And then I guess the third piece of that is when did you start to get uncomfortable with all of that? That's a lot. Aldo, that's a big.
let me start with the last part first. When did I start getting uncomfortable with that? I was uncomfortable with that from the beginning. All right.
Okay.
From the beginning. Yep. But I knew that I needed to do this in order to sustain this newfound family, if that makes sense.
That was my experience. Yes, for sure. Yeah.
Because if you don't do these things, then you're kicked out. And there's no way that I'm losing this. You understand? This is gold for me right now. From a mental health standpoint, this is gold. And there's no way I'm losing it. So the recruiting process. The recruiting process was basically like a sales job. You see, when I was recruiting people into the organization, I recognized that we had to meet a quota. I recognized that we had to increase our numbers, but I didn't really care if people believed in God or not. I just kept that as my secret. I just wanted people to experience the same happiness that I had.
Ah,
if that makes sense.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. Yeah.
It's like, nah, man, you gotta come with me to this church, man. You gotta check this out, man. This is the bee's knees. I mean, I didn't use that word, but you know, I'm just
we're from the South. Bee's knees works just fine.
You know, that's why I said I wanted to be relatable to all people. but seriously, that's what it was. So that was my motivation. I wanted people to feel the same happiness that I had. But what it was it was all about bringing in people and increasing number. And it wasn't about taking care of people thereafter. And as an 18, 19-year-old kid, 20-year-old kid, I'm almost embarrassed about it now, but I didn't realize people had needs. I didn't know people had psychological issues. I didn't know people had mental issues. I didn't know I had mental issues. You understand? And I didn't realize that people came into the church for different reasons. I didn't realize that. I'm just here as a salesman trying to promote this church as best as I can. And ironically, I was pretty successful at it, right? Where I was able to bring in people and be fruitful, quote unquote, as the term goes, right? And And when you're fruitful, man, you're like employee of the month. You're like employee of the month. And it became competitive amongst everybody. But that was it. That was the whole mission. The whole purpose was to recruit people, right? We would hang out and do fun stuff with the members, right? We would do fun stuff. For example, it'd be like, all right, listen, hey, Kenny, man, let's go to the batting cage on Tuesday. Cool. Let's go to the batting cage. While we're at the batting cage, make sure we invite people to church.
Right. There's never a break. Yeah.
There's never a break. Yeah. And now we're going home. We're going home on the train. And I live in New York City, and the trains are everything. The trains are the veins of the city. And when you're riding the train home, you got to talk to somebody on the train.
Captive market.
Captive market. That's right. You got to talk to somebody on the train. You understand? And when you get home to your neighborhood, the people in your neighborhood better know that you go to church. They better know. Otherwise, what are you doing this for? Otherwise, God isn't happy with you. So our marketing, sales tactic, whatever you want to use, was always on. It was never off, ever off. So
now I hear you on that. And we never called it marketing. We, you know, for us, it was witnessing. We've got to witness. We've got to be witnesses.
Oh, yes, yes, yes. See, I call it marketing now. But back then, we just called it sharing our faith.
We didn't even call it witnessing.
Yeah. It was like we're going to share our faith with everybody. But I'm using that term now, you know, in retrospect, because it was.
Got it.
It was sales, man.
Feels that way.
That's what I was going to ask. You didn't see yourself at the time as a salesperson. You used that term in retrospect.
Oh, I saw it as the pressure to save souls. I mean, the mission was to save souls, truly. So if you were the kind of person that wasn't comfortable approaching a strangers, you better get comfortable, because the expectation is you got to approach the strangers to save their soul. There are some big, big things at risk here. Ooh, that was just always really uncomfortable for me. Yeah.
That's right. That's right. Better get comfortable. I think the way you said it is very accurate. It's, you're not comfortable. Cool. Get comfortable. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Or feel uncomfortable and do it anyway. Aldo, in Norman, when I was working on my dissertation, I spent a lot of time in coffee shops. Deborah's already laughing. And, you know, I grew up in a church that was an evangelizing church. You know, we did a lot of, you know, New Testament, I think you described it as New Testament, you know, wrapped up in New Testament belief. So I knew the formula, and I would get approached in coffee shops. And, you know, it always starts with, well, they just sit down. They don't even ask for permission to sit down or can we bother you? They just sit down and start in with the series of questions. And in the ending with, let's pray together. And I thought at the time, of course, I was always the kind of person that would let people sit down with me, even though Chris Wilson would call that a consent violation, which I love.
I was just about to say that. Shout out to Chris Wilson.
Shout out to Chris Wilson. Consent violations.
Yes.
Well, now I think of it that way, but I would always be like, sure, you can. But I was just amused that this is the new thing. Because if there had been coffee shops where people were hanging out when I was growing up, I feel quite certain they would have sent us into coffee shops to witness to people.
Yeah, anywhere was fair game for us. It didn't matter. It really didn't matter. Especially, you know, being here in New York City, where there's no place where there aren't people. You know, overpopulated is probably not the word. So it was. The field was ripe, you know, for us to evangelize and recruit people, and that's what it was. And I didn't realize that a lot of people we recruited were young.
Yeah.
You know, I didn't realize that at the time. Mm-hmm. You know, like that was just, I thought it just so happened that way. But everybody was young. Everybody was in high school. Everybody was in college or fresh out of college. And very rarely did we baptize people that were in their 30s. Like it happened.
Yeah.
It happened. Mm-hmm. But if I was to put a ratio to it, it might be like 5 to 1, you know, five college-age people to one 30-year-old person, you know, something like that. So it was always youth driven, always.
What did you get for doing a good job recruiting?
You got recognition. You got recognition. You know, you got praise, you got stature, and you got security that you were not going to be kicked out of the group. again, I really need to stress that. Yeah. I don't know if any former listeners former members are listening to the program, but in my experience, everything for me was just driven off of, I can't mess this up. I can't mess this up. There's no way I'm losing these friends. There's no way.
And did you understand that you could get kicked out because you had seen people get kicked out? Or was it just the fear of God was sort of instilled in you from the group?
I've seen people get kicked out. And then at one point, I was kicked out, right? A year
after
joining.
Tell us about that.
I was kicked out. So like I said before, right? I've been living with depression, right, for a long time prior to coming to the church. And if anyone in your audience has ever experienced depression, they know that it just doesn't go away. It might be dormant for a little while, but you know, it'll come back to you.
You can't pray it away.
You cannot pray it away. Contrary to popular opinion, and by popular I mean in the church, you can't pray it away. And you feel horrible when you can't, because they tell you to and you can't.
Exactly. They tell you that you can be successful. Yeah.
They tell you that. And then it's like when you don't feel successful, you're thinking that, oh man, was this a mistake? Am I that bad of a person? I don't know. But anyhow, so like I was saying, so it never goes away. Your depression never goes away. And so even while a member, I would have these moments where, all right, this is going to sound weird. As a kid, I always did horribly in school. Always. I don't know why, but I just did. And I would always be fearful that I was going to get left back, right? Held back. I would not be able to be promoted at the end of the year, right? And yeah, this is going to sound weird, but school ends in June. That's the springtime. So every year since I was a kid, I would get sad during the springtime. And that has even lasted into adulthood. When the weather gets warm, like I go back to that initial sadness and panic and anxiety, right? And so here I am in the church. I got baptized in October, right? I came in the summertime, finally got baptized October. I'm in my senior year of high school, right? Things are going great. Things are going well. Then the springtime comes. And I didn't this is me just speaking in retrospect. Springtime comes. I'm no longer happy and chipper. I'm showing up to all the meetings. I'm doing everything that's supposed to happen. Because you're supposed to show up to every single church service. You're supposed to be with church members all the time, literally 7 days a week. So I'm doing all those things. But ladies, I'm my zest is gone. And people are approaching me, leaders are approaching me saying, hey, what's wrong? You okay? And actually they didn't say if I was okay. It was more like, hey, you know, shape up, you know? Shape up or ship out. But I couldn't.
Which makes you feel worse, by the way. You're already feeling bad. And then that kind of expectation and those judgments just heap hard on top of hard.
It keeps going. Yeah. It keeps going. And I'm not, you know, and I'm not able to really understand what's happening. Again, I'm very grateful that I have the language for it now and I'm able to explain now what was happening. But at the moment, I didn't know, man. I didn't know it was a depressive bout. I didn't know that. And it lasted for a couple months where I just wasn't joyful. And that's all it was, ladies. Literally, I wasn't smiling anymore. I was moody. I was 18. It's the springtime. I'm having these flashbacks of having these poor marks in school, all this other stuff. And I'm about to graduate high school and I don't really have any prospects. I don't have any prospects. I don't know what happens next. So I have all this anxiety. It's building up, but I don't know it. And then finally, in October of 1996, there was a meeting with one of the leaders. Basically, they told me to get out, you know? And they didn't say it exactly like that. It was like, all right, man, so what do you want to do? Do you want to change? Because if you're not going to change, you got to leave. And I didn't know what to say or do, so I just got up. I just got up and walked out, and I remember walking out and just crying, you know, anger, you know, and I had to keep it to myself. You can't tell people about this. You know, you can't let people see you cry. You can't do any of that.
Well, and do you feel ashamed? Like you have done something wrong. There's something so wrong with you that, you know, the people that you turn to for sanctuary essentially kick you out of the sanctuary.
They kick you out. And what was more, I don't remember feeling ashamed. But I do remember feeling extremely disappointed, because once you leave, nobody calls you. Nobody cares. It's gone. Like you go from 100 to zero quickly. And that had such a damning effect on me that it took a long time to recover from that. And that was 1996. So then all of 1997 was just me in this haze, just in a haze of just sadness. It was what I was describing to you at 18 years old. It now multiplied. And I don't know how I made it. I really don't. I really, really don't know.
It makes me feel sad for you listening to this story. It makes me feel sad for you that you went through that.
It was terrible. Yeah. And then I wound up coming back, right?
Were you invited back, or did you come back and say, please, I want to be a part of the fold again?
Man, it was weird, because I know we have a time limit, because, man, I could...
I know. We could do four episodes.
Man, I was invited back by a different group, because we were in New York City and we were separated amongst the five boroughs. So now I actually enrolled in college. Wow, believe it or not, I found my way into college somehow. And it was I knew it was them. We called ourselves Disciples. I knew it was them because of the way they acted. It was the same language.
Formulaic. Language. Yeah. Yeah. It's formulaic. Yeah.
You know, I got to say, man, listening to your program and now speaking with you, my vocabulary has increased. That's now three words that I'm going to. Let me write that down. Here we go. Got that. Formulaic.
That's funny.
I might use that in another episode.
And you feel free.
When I do, it's going to be shout out to Deborah. But anyhow, no, excuse me, to Robin. Sorry.
Yeah,
Robin.
That's all right. You can shout out to Deborah too, though.
We can. It's gonna be a package deal. It's a package deal. No, but they invited me back, and I was like, hell yeah! It was like a chance to start over, you know. And you had to go through this process of what they call restoration, because you fell away, right? When you leave, it's you fell away, and you fell away from God. You left God, and you are eternally damned. And you are lucky that we're allowing you back. And me and the mental state that I was in, I'll sign up again. And when I came back the second time, I knew that I had these moments of sadness, but I knew that I had to keep it under wraps. I knew that I had to follow suit, and I knew that it could be taken away from me. And so when I came back for the second stint, which lasted longer than the first stint, it was more profound on my life going forward. I hope I answered the question.
Oh my gosh, you did.
I'm just wondering, chronologically, here we are at year, two or three, you're back in, but you end up staying for 9 years until you're 27 years old. What happened during that second stint that made you want to stay and then made you, maybe this laid the groundwork for later figuring out that where you were was a cult? I'm interested in your thought process there.
Okay, so let me tackle that in pieces. Regarding the term cult, we all knew it was a cult. We loved the term because people called us cult. You understand? Time Magazine would write an article about us. 2020 had a special about us, right? Fox News had a little expose about us, right? We'd be on different campuses and people would ban us from campuses. And we'd like, look, they're persecuting us. Look, they're calling us a cult. And we'd love it. Do you understand?
Yeah,
didn't believe it was a cult. I'm sorry, go ahead.
Well, oh no, I was just gonna say it makes me think of that expression that people bond through conflict. So people throwing that kind of stuff at you just makes you bond harder.
Makes you bond harder, mm-hmm. and it made us really believe in a sick way that we were the only church.
Yeah.
We were the ones that were going to heaven. Not everybody else. Just because you called yourself a Christian don't mean that you... No. It's us. That's first century Christian-like. You understand? The first century Christians were persecuted, therefore we're being persecuted. And so we really put ourselves on that pedestal. So to answer your question, Deborah, we always knew it was a cult, and we always prided ourselves on that. If somebody called us that, we took it as a badge of honor, right? So what changed the second time around was I didn't want to be kicked out. I knew what it felt to be kicked out. I didn't have enough belief in myself to want to make it out in the world alone. I didn't. And I told you before, I didn't have any, you know, prospects in life prior to. These people gave me the confidence to enroll in college. They was like, you know, you could do this. I'm like, you sure? I don't know. And albeit it was a community college, but it was college nonetheless. And then when I'm in college, it made me, when I'm in community college, then I learned you could transfer to a four-year institution, right? And so now this place has given me discipline. This place has given me structure. This place has given me interaction. This place is insatiating my need for belonging, right? So I had all those things are secure. So when all those needs are met, one can be focused. So now I'm focused in school. Now I'm doing my thing in school. Now I'm on dean's list. Now I'm doing this. And now I'm learning about you could transfer to a four-year university. And I did that. And it was so blissful. It was like a renaissance for me. You know, my mom said, as we discussed these things, because my mom didn't stand in the way of this.
I know. I loved that. I heard that in one of your podcast episodes, that your mom let her children decide their own religious conscience. Which blows my mind, because, you know, when you're affiliated with these kinds of groups, there's really not an option. You don't have the choice.
No, man. You know, shout out to my mom.
I mean, it's great.
I think it was because she was with the witnesses, the Jehovah's Witnesses. She just studied with them and she recognized the time commitment that they wanted. And she never went to Kingdom Hall or anything like that. So I think part of her letting us just choose our own path was because she saw how controlling they were at the time. And I forgot where I was. Man, this happens all the time when you have gray hair. I'm sorry.
I forgot where I was.
You don't have to tell me that, Aldo.
No, and I probably said something that made us go left turn, but there's just so much good stuff.
I remember now. My mom said that when I was a kid, right, a little kid, I was very gregarious, right? You know, easygoing, fun-loving, smiling all the time. And she said, when I became, you know, an adolescent and into all of my teenage years, the lightness went out of my eyes, right? There was a darkness. And we now know that's the depression. But at the time, we don't know what this is, right? Because this is the 1980s, 1990s, right? Where mental health was not really as spoken freely as it is today. And she said that when I joined that church, she felt like her son came back.
What you're describing is what I try to tell people, which is just because you're being critical of something for really good reasons doesn't mean it was all bad. There are some really, really good things that I will always appreciate about my own religious upbringing. There's a tipping point where the bad starts to outweigh the good, but that doesn't mean that the good didn't exist. And you're talking about some really, really cool, good stuff. And your mom having her son back that's incredible.
You know, so it's like, it was unreal. It was almost as if I was supposed to be there, you know? That's how I felt about it. And to answer the first part of Deborah's question, you know, what made me ultimately leave? There wasn't anything scandalous. There wasn't anything salacious. It was, I kind of just stepped back and just outgrew it.
It was almost as if,
you know, when people leave their parents' home, most of the time, it's not because they hate their parents or anything like that. You know, there's some cases where that's the case, but most of the time, it's not because people hate their parents. It's just because you've outgrown it and it's time to, you know, move on.
I love that. And, I love the outgrown.
And that's what happened. So I just decided to let me try this on my own. And I did not realize it was a cult until about 8 or 9 years after leaving.
Mm-hmm. Is that because you needed the distance to get the perspective to see it for that?
No, you definitely needed it because
you knew. Okay.
If I can, real quick, this it reminds me of
yeah, you can.
When I was eight, we took a third grade, we took a trip to the Empire State Building, right? Never been to the Empire State Building. It's cool. It's like, oh man, I want to go. King Kong climbed the building. Let's see this thing. And so we went to the museum inside the Empire State Building. I'm in there, boom, bam, we're watching. It's great. And now we leave the building, right? Remember, this is the first time I'm seeing it. I really want to see this building. So now we leave the building and we're standing directly outside of the Empire State Building. And we're about, you know, right up to the building. Like you could touch it. And when I look up, you can only see about 100 feet up, right? And as I'm up close to the building, I'm like, this thing isn't tall. What are they talking about? What are they talking about? King Kong climbed this? What are they talking about? And so now the class, we proceed to walk north. And the further away we look, you know, I look back every few blocks and it got bigger. And I'm like, oh, it really is that big. What? And it wasn't until I stepped away and then you're several blocks away and you could appreciate the size of the Empire State Building. So in the same way, it wasn't until I stepped away from the church and was years removed from the church that I was like, wait a second, was I part of a cult? Hold up. Because now that's a whole nother thing. And now it's embarrassing. And now I got to keep that a secret, right? Because who wants to admit that?
Yeah. Yeah. No, I appreciate that you emphasize that in your podcast that because people make assumptions about people who join cults and like it's just a negative evaluation, right? And that's not what it is. I mean, it's just not what it is. I think the reasons that you joined are totally legit. I have another question. Your use of the word reclamation for your podcast. Why reclamation? I ask this question because that's one of my favorite words to use instead of like redemption or, you know, things like, did you have a particular reason for choosing the reclamation? And what is it?
So the idea for that title came from Dr. Michelle Melton, who's our first guest on the program. And the reason we went with that title is because this is our story to tell. This is ours. And it's time I reclaim it. You don't. And when I'm talking about you, I'm talking about the religious establishment of the church that I was a part of. Because when you leave, they say that you're weak. They say that you're a fallaway. They say you're this. They say you're that. No. I'm going to tell the narrative. I'm reclaiming this story. And we put out the podcast so that people can listen to it. Former members, now I'm learning that this cult-like experience is really beyond the International Church of Christ, right? The International Church of Christ is, we thought it was bigger than what it was, but in actuality, that church was just a sentence in a novel, right? That's really what it was. And so that's what the reclamation is. This is us reclaiming our story and helping the listeners reclaim their story as we tell our story. And I hope I answered that question.
Well, you did. And that's exactly the reason that I prefer that word to some of the other words that get kicked around for, you know, religious and spiritual transformation for the same reason. The other thing that your podcast has really helped me to do, Aldo, just for you, is sometimes, Deborah's heard me talk about this before. So I'm so far past when I was deep in the religious prison, right? I mean, I escaped the prison, but just because you leave the prison doesn't mean you're free. And there's this whole other process where you have to become spiritually free before you can really claim freedom. And so I've done that work. You know, my whole adult life has been about this process. And so sometimes I go, well, was it really that bad? Am I just remembering it worse than it really was? And then I'm listening to you talk and Elena talk and Cousin Eddie's questions, which cracked me up because it was clear to me he was, and your other guests. And I'm like, yeah, because there's so much that I've forgotten even. And then the stories and the things that you all are talking about help me remember. And I'm like, that's stuff that probably I wouldn't have access to unless I was going back and reading through my journals. But yeah, it was that bad. And it transcends any one particular denomination, any one religion, transcends religions.
That makes me happy. Not happy that you experienced that, but it makes me happy that that it's connected with somebody beyond this organization. And
I think it's a
universal experience more than people recognize.
I do too. So I know we only have a few minutes. Deborah sort of gave me that we only have a few minutes. She keeps us on track.
I saw her. I witnessed it. I saw her. I did. I witnessed it.
It was the peace sign.
I thought she was saying hello to me, but I recognize it's 2 minutes.
Because she knows that 2 minutes really means more like seven, or she just wants me to start to like get my mind around we're not going to be here for much longer. Yes.
So I'm going to break in here and ask the question, another question that we ask every guest. And I hate to end, but we will end with this on a positive note.
Boo.
Oh, okay. I know. She's moaning and groaning here.
I say this every time. I'm not ready. Okay, go.
I know. What is your favorite spiritual practice, Aldo?
My favorite spiritual practice is to sit and think.
Yes.
Because sitting and thinking, I think, is equal to praying.
Yep.
Because you're in tune with something, and in tune with something greater than yourself.
Oh, my
gosh.
And
I think to sit and think is currently my favorite spiritual practice.
I love that because I'm unable to do that for any appreciable amount of time, as Robin knows.
Yeah.
I get distracted very easily, so I really appreciate the fact that that is your favorite spiritual practice.
Well, and it's mine too, Aldo. I this is why I always had such a hard time being one of those Christians that, you know, like, I don't know if you've heard this, they're heart Christians and head Christians. And I read a book called, I think it was called Heart Christians and Head Christians. It was the first time I ever felt affirmed in my thinking nature, because that's how I am spiritual, is by reading and thinking and reflecting and journaling. But Deborah, she needs some physicality with her spirituality. we put that up on our social media, physicality, you know, with the spirituality. That's her. She's got to have something, you know, and for her, it's yoga. But
okay, all
right. I don't need that. I need to be able to do it like you say, just kind of sit and think.
I'm way too fidgety for that. Well, Aldo, we have loved having you with us. We will continue to listen to your podcast because we love it.
Thank you.
Everything that you do for people like you and like us who have experienced some level of incarceration. So thank you for your great work.
Yeah, and I'm hoping you'll come back. Well, can we invite you? Will you come back another time to keep unpacking?
That would be a yes and
okay.
A yes.
Shout out
Stop
to
playing.
Comebacks. That's the other thing
shout out to sequels. Shout out to sequels.
Aldo does a lot of shout outs on his program, and I'm there for them. Those are awesome. So shout out to sequels, and we will have you back.
Oh man, I love it. Thank you very much.
It was a great pleasure. Thank you. It was so fun.
We also will link your podcast in our show notes.
Absolutely.
All right, cool. Thank you very much, ladies. Great speaking with you.
So appreciate you. And we'll let you know too before your episode drops. We'll slate it into the spring lineup and let you know when it drops, and certainly be promoting it on your social media.
Cool. Thank you very much, ladies.
Okay.
Thank you.
It was a pleasure. Thanks so much. Thank you for listening to the Incarcerated Christian Podcast. We invite you to rate and review our show. And remember, you can find this interview and others on our website, theincarceratedchristian.com, or anywhere you access podcasts. Don't forget to connect with us on Instagram and TikTok at The Incarcerated Christian, and on Twitter at @TICC_podcast_. You can find more information about us and our show on our website. Again, that's theincarceratedchristian.com. Until next time, go forth in love and light.